You're in the CMO suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello, hello, hello. It is Sean Halter here with the CMO Suite presented to you by Connectivity Holdings. Co-hosting with me today is Samantha Pick. Hello, Samantha.
Hey, Sean.
We have DJ the DJ out today because we're really excited. We actually have our guest in studio today. It is Dana Paris, the CMO of SkinFix. Hello, Ms. Paris. Mrs.
Hi.
Paris, I guess I should say. Is it Ms. Paris? What do I use?
Ms. Paris.
Ms. Paris. Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us in the studio today. We're very excited to have you.
Thanks
How
for having
are
me.
How are things at SkinFix?
You know, it's a startup company, so the highs are really high and the lows are really low. But overall, it's been a terrific ride for me.
And you've worked in that kind of skincare industry. Do you feel like that's been for most of your career? Is that fair to say? I mean, you're 25, so
Right. Sure. So in the 3 years I've been working,
yes.
I would say beauty has been the majority of my career.
Yeah.
I started off at Hallmark Cards and then went to Kraft Foods and then transitioned to Hearst Magazines, which was a perfect segue into beauty. And I've been in beauty for well over 10 years now.
We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Well over 10 years. And we got a chance to meet you a little bit a few years ago when you were with OGX, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And so that was interesting. I think one of the things that was interesting to me about OGX specifically is it was a massive brand and it was headquartered in Clearwater, Florida, of all places. And I don't think people even really knew that's where it was. And I know even when I've talked to people just about OGX hair care, sometimes they'll kind of scratch their head. But as soon as you show them that picture of the bottle, did you call it tear-shaped? Or how would you describe the bottle itself?
Yeah, it was almost a tear shape. It's more of a oval with a little cap on top.
Oval with a cap on top.
Yeah, and we specifically... pushed that icon of our bottle shape versus our brand name. So for us, we felt that pushing kind of this secretive, beautiful hair care product was more important than hitting you hard with a brand name.
Yeah, and so if you're not familiar with OGX, my suggestion again would be literally Google search it. As soon as you see it, the bottle will pop up and you'll say, oh yeah, I know that brand.
Yeah.
So talk to us prior to being over at OGX. Remind me where you were, Dana, and just talk a little bit about that journey a bit if you can.
Sure. Prior to OGX, I was at L'Oreal, and I was at L'Oreal for a long time. And my journey there really started because I wanted to be in the beauty industry and I wanted to be in New York City, and that was the perfect, for me, company to do it. They only focus on beauty brands. They only hold beauty brands. They hold, I think, over 40 beauty brands, so brands that you might not even be aware of. But they are, if not the number one, probably the number one or number two beauty company out there. And they're very focused on being innovative in everything they do, especially leveraging really great insights. They have this great ability to kind of fail forward. So you're really encouraged to take risks in your job. And so I started there and was there for a long time and really loved it.
Great.
So Dana, how do you go about finding talented marketers and building a team in the beauty industry?
Yeah, so from a marketing perspective, and I don't think it's necessarily specific to the beauty industry, but over the last 10 years, the way that we look for talent and we structure teams has had to significantly change, right? So you used to have what we would call brand managers, and the brand managers would really, you know, manage the business as a general manager. Now we need data scientists on the marketing team. We need content creators, right? We need influencers. We need behind the scenes people. We need people that are in customer service. What would have been customer service before has now moved into marketing, and now it's community management. So the entire kind of skill set of what I look for in building a team has completely shifted, and finding that type of talent is challenging. You really have to look for people that are flexible, adaptable, because the world of marketing continues to shift, and it's really an exciting place to be.
Yeah, and so I had a question to extend off of that a little bit, Dana, which is one of the interesting things that you've brought up, and I feel like it's almost a consistent mantra as we interview more and more CMOs for the show, is just the fact that things obviously have changed. Your skill set that's almost required, especially in that position, is a full understanding of sales now, which maybe you had to have some of that before. Now you need to know all of sales. You need to know all of the normal marketing channels. You need to understand CRMs now. You need to have somehow the understanding of all of these foreign languages in some ways. Plus, you have to have success and longevity and career path. And that seems like such a challenge in some ways. The bar has been set so high and the expectations are so high. And then you throw something like influencers in there and all these other, you know, parts and elements to it. So how do you wrap your brain around that, even in your space, especially, you know, that you're working with in some ways, as you said, a little bit of a startup now? How do you find the time to be able to learn all the things you didn't know?
For me, I try to learn from peers and from others in the industry that are doing aspects of whatever it is better than what I'm doing, right? So I look to learn from peers and actually people that are younger than me and are in the space naturally. So, right, like you mentioned, we've never had to really be that involved with sales now. And when I was at J&J owned OGX. Sales from D2C and Amazon and e-commerce sat underneath my role,
yeah.
And same now, right? So it has completely shifted. I think that, you know, I attend a lot of industry events. That helps. You get to learn a lot from people that attend the events. I find a lot of value in networking. And pretty much every time I hit a new city, I'm networking with somebody for lunch, breakfast, dinner, whether it's an influencer, whether it's another CMO, whether it's another CEO, and we're just constantly sharing best practices.
So there are definitely a lot of channels, different channels that you can use out there to reach consumers. What do you find at SkinFix is the channel that works best for you?
Yeah, we're a social first, mobile first brand. So we're highly focused on social media, digital media. That's basically
right.
Where all of our kind of paid media, true paid media is going. Of course, we still believe heavily in earned media and spend a lot of time fostering relationships with editors, bloggers, influencers. But traditional media from 10 years ago, we're not as invested in right now.
So I was reading Alberto Bria, I believe is his last name. He's I hate to say a LinkedIn influencer, but he kind of is. It's a, you know, he's a guy that's been in the space for a long time. I read a lot of his stuff on LinkedIn. One of the interesting things I feel like he posted today was just the fact that with data, with all of the information that's available to us, in some ways we've moved away from understanding how consumers create love of brand. And we've gotten so wrapped in social media and PPC. And so you can't not be in that space, but how do you navigate that? How do you still live in the world of building a brand, especially if it's a newer brand, utilizing the data that's available to you, but understanding that there's only so much that information is going to give you, and you still have to build brand
yeah.
without the expectation that things are going to change instantaneously?
Yeah, no, I think it comes down to you have to have a very clear point of view of who you are as a brand and be very authentic to that, and then align yourself with consumers and influencers in a more visible way in social media so that it remains authentic. And we've been able to really garner great brand love, or I call it brand stickiness, when we have all of that working symbiotically. I've actually found that social media has allowed us to break down the barriers with brand or with our consumers
yeah.
and have more brand love and engagement. So in the past, we put out a one-way message, right? A TV ad or a print ad. Now we have a conversation. We put out a piece of creative or content, and we have a real conversation
yeah.
instantaneously, not with just with that one person, but with 10 people in a group or 20 or 200 through social media. And that's why community management is at the heart of my marketing team. And it was at OGX. You know, that was the key to us.
So you use the word community management, and that's a word that probably doesn't sound foreign to you in most ways because you live especially in the right. in the beauty space. But it's a word or a terminology or some phrasing that for legacy brands that may still feel a little foreign to them. So can you take just a couple of minutes to talk a little bit about that, because I think, again, your point of the fact that beauty's already been living in this space for
yeah.
a few years, it just feels like that's just what you do because you're there. But I feel like, again, for some of those legacy brands, they're still trying to navigate their way into the space and figure out how do they get there.
Sure. I mean, we've kind of abandoned the term customer service at this point. It's very obsolete, at least for beauty. But what we do is community management is a way to reactively and proactively connect with consumers through the digital landscape. So my team will proactively reach out to consumers that are, let's say, maybe struggling with eczema, and they'll find consumers through hashtags or conversation, through deep social listening, reach out to them, surprise and delight them, send them some products that might help, you know, solve their needs, skin needs. Or it could be on the other end. You know, most consumers are more comfortable reaching out to us through social media handles, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, to let us know if they, you know, have questions on where to buy our products, what's right for them, you know, if they're having any sort of issues, they'll let us know through those channels. So that's how we view community management. We really view it as a way to not only handle customer service and questions, but also proactively start conversations with our consumers or new consumers.
Dana, what's your favorite part about the marketing or media world today versus 3 to 5 years ago?
Yeah, so I think, you know, 3 to 5 years ago, we were just on the cusp of kind of learning what real content was, what how to connect with consumers in this digital landscape. And I feel like now we have a much deeper understanding of that. So now we're able to really get deeper into those insights because we're not on the surface anymore. We're able to go much further down and really deliver personalized, customized content in a way that's more meaningful to consumers when they want to see it or when they have certain issues arise. And we did that before through things like search, but we weren't really able to deliver customized content to them. So I feel like we're in a much more personalized space in marketing than we've ever been.
Definitely.
And it will continue to explode.
So last question here for us, Dana. Talk to us about what do you feel like you still need to learn? What are the areas that you feel like, gosh, I wish I knew more. I wish I had more time to kind of...
Cryptocurrency.
Cryptocurrency.
That's where...
Really?
Yeah. I wish that I understood cryptocurrency
from a blockchain perspective, because blockchain can impact marketing to some extent because of the one-on-one element of it.
A little bit of everything.
Or you're thinking you're just trading in cryptocurrency and just forgetting the whole marketing job altogether.
No. I believe that promotions, GWPs, different ways to animate your business could be done through cryptocurrency blockchains in the future. And I would love to be on the cutting edge of that and really understand that deeper. And I think we're going to have to learn it pretty quickly, because I feel like that's where people are going to be trading, using consumer cash, right, to buy things.
Yeah. So if we can hit on that for just one more second, and then we'll wrap. And again, we absolutely appreciate the time. And a great episode for us here. Again, the fact that we've been able to spend some time with Dana Pera, CMO from SkinFix, for the entire 15 minutes. We really appreciate that. But let me end with that cryptocurrency piece, because again, I think that's something that you hear a lot about. I think, again, that's an area where marketers are like, oh my God, I just learned the last four things you guys talked about on this, and now I got to go learn cryptocurrency. What do you feel like the bit that you do understand of it? How do you feel like that connection, in essence, can be made? And you know, and how fast do you think that's going to roll out?
I think it's going to come quicker than we are ready for it. I think that it will come through, again, giving value back to either our direct customer. Let's say I'm working with a Sephora or a Walgreens or a Walmart, and they're doing a loyalty program. It could be done through that. We're giving value back to the consumer or to our customer through cryptocurrency or through blockchain. I think that we're just scratching the surface to understand
how
it's going to work, what we can do. I think it's going to be a lot safer than what the fear is right now. And I think it's going to be a part of our everyday conversation, and it's not going to be just about one element of how we do commerce.
Well, and to wrap there, you know, again, it's a great point that sometimes technology comes out, in this case, you know, cryptocurrency, but it leads to blockchain, and blockchain certainly will take us out from there. So again, we want to thank Dana Pera so much for joining us on the show today. We want to thank you guys for joining us. Once again, this has been the CMO Suite. Thank you, Sam.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings. You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the CMO Suite. I am Sean Halter. It's presented by Connectivity Holdings. And with me today, co-hosting is DJ the DJ.
Hello, Sean.
Hello, DJ. And Samantha Pick. How are you, Sam?
Great. Great to be here, Sean.
Thank you guys again for joining us for another episode of the CMO Suite. We've got with us on the line today a great friend, a really fantastic contemporary, and somebody who I've certainly looked up to many times over the years simply because he's taller than me. It's Chris Tomasso, president with First Watch Restaurant Group. Talk to us a little bit about just how you kind of got into the industry and really where you kind of cut your chops.
Yeah, so kind of stumbled or backed into the restaurant industry, even though it was among my first jobs as a kid, was working in my uncle's pizza restaurant. Never intended it to be a career path. Always wanted to get into sports and entertainment, to be honest with you, and majored in advertising and public relations, and then got an internship at the Orlando Magic my last year of school, which was great. And I'll give you the shortened version of it. Ended up working for the sports cable network for Florida. That back then was called Sunshine Network. Now it's Fox Sports Florida. But had the Orlando Magic and a lot of the universities and the Marlins as our properties that we promoted and worked with, and really enjoyed that. And then got into a true PR role, which really what I thought I would be doing. But it was for a public relations firm in Orlando, and we happened to land Hard Rock Cafe International as a client. We already had Universal Studios as an account, so still got to work in entertainment in both places. And then that was really the height of Hard Rock at the time, and that whole entertainment era. And just had a lot of fun doing it, being a consultant to them. And then they asked me to come in-house, and I did, and I ended up staying there 6 years. And that was really my first, call it, restaurant company job that wasn't working in a restaurant. And again, but I didn't take it because it was a restaurant. I took it because it was really an entertainment and music company. And one thing led to another. And I got a call from Cracker Barrel one day. They needed somebody who could help market restaurants and retail. And there's not a lot of those. Hard Rock is among the leaders in that, with them doing about, 40% of their business was their retail. So took the job at Cracker Barrel because it was a publicly traded company, and I thought it'd be a great challenge to do something, for a publicly traded company. And that's really when I kind of took that left turn into full-on restaurant industry. And from there, I came here to First Watch, and I've been here 12 years. So that's, like I said, I've never intended to go into restaurants, but that's where my path led me.
Well, and DJ and I appreciate all those free tickets when you were over at Hard Rock. Do you remember most of those times, DJ?
I don't, but that has nothing to do with you, Chris.
I was there.
I was there. And no smartphones back then, DJ.
That's a very good point.
So, Chris, how has First Watch changed since you joined way back in 2006?
Oh, boy. Well, when I started, we had 44 restaurants, and this past Monday we opened two restaurants, which made 352 and 353. So just from a sheer size standpoint, we've grown considerably, but our brand has really transformed over, I'll just speak for the 12 years that I've been here. We went from a pretty middle-of-the-road breakfast, brunch, and lunch restaurant. Some things that people don't realize, when I started here, we had, six different logos, and our server uniforms were khaki shorts with Hawaiian shirts and white nurses' shoes. So if you've been into First Watch lately, we're about as far away from that as possible. So, and that came from really focusing in on what the brand was really all about, and just making sure that all of our touch points paid that off. And they weren't back then. And so there was a lot of foundational work to be done over the years. And that's not something that you can do in 12 months, 18 months. I mean, it's really been something that's been evolving for 10 to 12 years, from our menu to our atmosphere to our real estate strategy to our hiring profiles. I mean, all those things have evolved. And a lot of people think we're quote unquote overnight success, but we've been around for 34 years. It's just that we've finally aligned our brand to a place that now really resonates with the consumer better than it ever has. And you know, we've been on a tremendous growth run here for about 10 years.
Out of all the episodes we've done, this is the one that has now made me the hungriest, because I love First Watch. And I also love pizza. You brought up Pizza Parlor earlier. Deep dish or thin crust?
No, it was thin crust. It was
sorry, DJ.
New York style for sure.
I'm a fan of the deep dish, but I like a thin crust too.
Well, and you don't seem to mind the millionaire bacon from time to time.
What's that?
Millionaire bacon. That's the most fantastic item they have on the First Watch menu. So, which brings me to a little bit of a transition.
I was still
there.
Thinking pizza.
I know.
I was like, I don't really like bacon on my pizza.
I'm trying to bring it back to First Watch. What do you want me to say?
All right. Good job.
Listen, with the menu, I guess my next question would be just that. You had an opportunity to move up out of the CMO position and into an even larger executive role there. That doesn't always happen. And so talk to us maybe a little bit about not only how that really came about. I know you're smart, so obviously I understand how that could come about from that perspective. But then maybe also talk a little bit about the menu itself and what role that has kind of played in your overall marketing strategy to create just some separation between you guys and some competitors in the space.
Yeah, I think that progression, which 10 years ago was pretty rare, is becoming more accepted now. It used to be the path to president CEO came up through either operations or finance, a CFO type person. But I think the world has changed, and I think companies and boards and private equity firms are recognizing the value of a differentiated brand and having somebody with a brand vision at the helm versus somebody who's interested in cost cutting or things like that. So for me, the way that came to be was, you know, I looked at building the brand from the inside out. You know, we don't spend a ton of dollars on media and those type of things. It really was building the brand from the inside out, which meant partnering with a lot of different disciplines within the organization. So, you know, specifically, you can't evolve a brand in the restaurant industry without partnering with operations. So that's what I did for many years in culinary and IT. And I think then what happened was, you know, you partner with those folks and you have some successes and you start to, you know, drive some initiatives that really make a difference in the organization. So that when the opportunity comes for, advancement like that, it's the most natural and the smoothest that could possibly be. Is like, hey, this guy's already been partnering with us. He's already done all these, led all these programs, and you know, we like where it's taken us, and let's see what he could do at the helm. So, again, really happy that I'm starting to see more and more of that, especially in our industry. I can rattle off five or six right now of CMOs that have become presidents, and it's very encouraging.
And what would you say is the biggest challenge that you've had to overcome through all the years that you've been in the industry as a whole?
Wow. I mean, it. I don't know what the biggest challenge that I've had to overcome, but, when I think if ever you're going to run a company, I think it's really important to understand what all of the major disciplines within the organization do and really understand what their life is like every day. So I've invested lots of time over the years being in the restaurants and standing side by side with operations and doing some functions with our finance department like end of period closings and things like that, so that they know that you know what they deal with every day. And I think you get a certain amount of mutual respect that way. And when you make an investment in their time and their world like that, I think it helps build loyalty, and they understand that you truly care about them and that you really want to understand what it is that they do. Because what I try to tell everybody here is almost everything any of us do affects so many other departments. So, for example, the marketing department, you know, they've all had to work in the restaurants because everything we roll out impacts operations, and I want them to know exactly how it does and what that will mean so that they can make decisions accordingly.
So, Chris, it's Sean. I'm going to ask the last question again. We absolutely appreciate the time and the insight.
And the chickichangas that you sent over.
The millionaire bacon.
I got to try that. I'm always on the chickichangas or the frittata one that they have.
Yeah, I don't know about the frittata. So, listen, here's my last question. You guys have been in the search for a new CMO. For a little while over there. And so If you can, since obviously this is the CMO suite, we have a lot of other CMOs who guest on the show. What's your advice for a CMO who's maybe thinking of transitioning, who's maybe looking out there? What are those things that as you've been through that interview process that seem to kind of help some people maybe stand out a little bit more than others? And again, thank you again for joining us on the show today.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's really easy, Sean, yet it's very difficult to find. It's a CMO or a marketing thought leader that has a really good grasp of the entire business. So, you know, I respect people who just want to be in marketing and don't have aspirations to maybe take the career path I did. But I think even in that role, it's critical that you have an understanding of the business, can sit across the table from, if it's restaurants, then the operations team. If it's retail, then it's the retail team, and know their business as well as they do. Know the business as well as they do. To have a silo mentality, even if the culture is not a siloed culture, it just pigeonholes you and makes you less valuable.
Well, again, we appreciate you spending some time with us today, Chris. We wish you certainly the best of luck. I'm sure by the time this episode airs, you'll have a fantastic CMO in place. Do not hesitate to send some free coupons, although we all contribute. We never turn free coupons down. Next time we'll have food in the studio, maybe. What do you think of that, DJ?
As long as iHeart allows it.
We'll make them allow. We got a thumbs up on that one. Again, thank you very much, Chris, for joining us on this episode today. Very special episode of the CMO Suite. One single guest. Chris, you're the first one that we're giving an entire episode to. So, thank you for all of that insight.
That to my bio. Thanks.
Thank you again, Chris, for the time. And thank you
Chris.
Very much for joining us on this episode of the CMO Suite, featuring Chris Tomasso, President, CEO, previous CMO of First Watch Restaurant Group. Sam, what did you take from that interview today? What do you feel like was one of the most important things that you kind of learned from Chris?
I thought that was great. I mean, I've always loved First Watch. To kind of hear a little bit more about the rebranding efforts is pretty interesting.
Yeah, and how about you, Mr. Hamilton?
I just can't stop thinking about the different things that I would want to eat when I get there. I'm a fan. I go there a lot. You and I, how many breakfast meetings have you and I had in the past over at First Watch?
Well, you know you've had a lot there when they know you by name, right?
Right.
You know you had
when
a lot
they don't ask you what right, drink you want.
They don't even ask you what you're drinking or what you're going to order.
It's there right? When you sit down.
So I would say to me, the thing that I took away from that the most is just the fact that as a CMO, you need to know every single part of the operation. You know, it used to be that you probably just needed to know what was the marketing plan, but you didn't necessarily need to know everything that was happening operationally, what's happening from a sales standpoint. And it definitely seems like that's really what's going to separate maybe the CMOs of yesterday to the CMOs of tomorrow. How do you feel about that, Mr. Hamilton?
Well, obviously there's no ceiling. When you get to CMO, I guess the next stop is
CEO or president.
CEO or president, yeah, right?
I mean, that's great news. Collected all the titles, so I'm not sure what else. Emperor Emeritus or something like that. I'm not entirely sure. So, yeah, I guess that's what I would take away from that. And it seems like as they continue that search, those are the things that seem to be the most important to them as they're trying to make some of that decisioning around that selection process. Well, listen, as we said, guys, thank you so much again for joining us for this episode. If you've got additional questions or additional insight that you'd like to provide, certainly feel free to find us on our Instagram page. You can find us also on the CMOsuite.com. If you've got additional questions for Chris, certainly feel free to send those to us as well, and we'll send those out, and we will catch you the next time on the CMO Suite presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Go right in. He's expecting you.
Welcome to the CEO Suite, Jerry.
It's Terry, sir.
Yep, like I said, Jerry. I was told by the board you've been our CMO for 4 years.
12 months.
And sales aren't what I'm looking for these days. Buck stops with you, so I've got a few questions I need answered, Jerry.
Name's Terry.
What lead gen system are we using? What's our social and digital strategy? Is our creative on point for all our targets? Do you have instant access to our CRM? To habla español? Oh, and is our programmatic problematic?
How can you be expected to know everything? At Connectivity Holdings, we provide C-level executives, marketing teams, and even agencies access to best-in-class solution providers across biddable media, search, social, influencer marketing, traditional, experiential, content curation, and more. These teams work with major brands and agencies to provide transparent and trackable solutions today's C-level marketers need.
Oh, and did you hire a new coordinator named Frank?
Oh, yes. He's great.
Fire him. Budget cuts. And I'll need those questions answered by end of day.
When you need solutions, not sales talk, connect to Connectivity Holdings at connectivityholdings.com. That's connectivityholdings.com.